If you keep attracting and dating emotionally unavailable men, or you can't get over your ex, this podcast is for you.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sinead Says podcast. I have brought in Sabrina Zohar, who is a dating coach. You may have seen her pop up on TikTok. She also has a podcast called Do the Work. And I've been following her on TikTok for a little while. And then I started following her on Instagram. And then I felt like I needed her help on some of the subjects that you have been asking me. Because even though I've been trying to tell as much advice as I can, I felt like I need more. I need support. And I definitely think that you are the girl for the job. So hello, welcome to the Sinead Says podcast. First, I would like to know like how you got into like this passion. I feel like you definitely have a drive and a passion for it. And it's so weird because on this podcast, anyone who has a drive and a passion is usually an expert of experience, as I can say myself as well. So that's usually what happens. But let us know how you got into this and why you're so passionate about helping people in their dating lives.
Totally. Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, so this all started for me. So I have a clothing company called Software, and that's kind of my past life was fashion and being really inundated in the fashion industry and just honestly fucking hating it. Like it's not for me. It is not like the Devil Wears Prada is very much an accurate representation of what you can expect in the fashion industry. And so almost seven years ago at this point, my mom went to the doctor with a headache and they found 6 brain aneurysms that grow to the top head of her vessel. And so that's where Software became started. I started it after she had her successful surgery. But in that time, I also started to realize that there was an issue within me, that I had something that was going on with the way that the dating life I had that was correlating to the results that I was getting was not in line with what it is that I wanted and what it is that I thought I was going to have. And it was really kind of my rock bottom around that time. And that's actually where I started with my narcissistic relationship. And so I had essentially married my father, same type of thing. They were similar. It was the same kind of situation, the same behaviors. It all felt very familiar. And at the time, I had no idea what anxious attachment style was, what these traumas were. I had no idea. I was completely oblivious. And I remember I read the book Attached, and it was the first time I realized that my ex was avoidant and I was anxious. Okay, cool. I had a name to it. And after the end of our relationship, which was tumultuous and grueling and all the things that we hear, that is actually what started my healing journey. And so from that, I started to do inner child work and ketamine treatments and all these kinds of different modalities, meditation, breath work, yoga, you name it. I've tried it and was running my business, realizing the mental health toll it was having and just feeling really alone and trying to navigate the dating world, not understanding the traumas and things that I had, learning about all these new things, but not really feeling like there was any place or resource for somebody to go to learn about these things from somebody that's actually experienced it. So exactly a year ago, like last week, I think it was, I started my TikTok and I just said, fuck it. I've been coaching people privately, just like life coaching and doing things on the side that felt like it was an alignment to me. And I said, listen, if there's people out there that can at least learn from experiences that I've had living in New York for 12 years, LA for 2, and now San Diego. So dating in major cities, dealing with all the types of attachment styles and traumas and all of those things, it bred within me this fire to share the stories that I had. And I did not realize the community that I would build. And then the podcast started and everything just continued to mushroom to where I have never been so excited to wake up in the mornings, because I know that I can help people in so many ways more than just creating clickbait or something that will manipulate people or get them in their delusions. I'm actually able to give people steps, tools, and actionable, you know, things that they can take to start to heal and not just blame or shame themselves.
Yeah. And I love that as well, that you personally have went through an anxious attachment and going through the patterns of attracting people like your primary caregivers, et cetera. And then you can understand what your client obviously needs and wants. And I feel like that as well. I feel like I've went through it all. And I like probably my journey probably started with the book Attached as well, because that was when I realized that I was an avoidant. So
really?
Well, I'm kind of an anxious and avoidant. But at that point in my life, when I had read that book, like I was very everyone at arm's length and like didn't want to let anyone in. And then like at the very end of the book, as an avoidant, it's very confronting, because at the very end of the book, there's like this little story. And it's like, I don't know if you remember, but in the book, it says something along the lines of, you think that you're watching a movie and the girl leaves the man for the person she actually loves, when in fact she's an avoidant and she leaves. And then next thing she thinks of an excuse of not to be with him. And then the cycle continues and continues. So this is kind of where I was at. And I was like, oh my God, I am confronted. I can't. And like, I want to experience love and stuff like that. And I have experienced it in my past, et cetera. But obviously, I think all those you know, all the hurt really made me an avoidant, made me more avoidant, like, in like as I went on my relationships. So I feel like I had to go and do the healing work, and I went to therapy and I did all the stuff. So yeah, like, it's such a nice journey to be on, because it's like, you're like, there's a way out, you know, there's a way to like save you from being this person. And can I ask you, like, what was it that, you know, you, the pattern that you kept seeing, like, you were an anxious attachment and you were going towards people that were emotionally unavailable? Would that be right?
Oh, completely. I mean, I was dating the same thing. It was the same. He's emotionally unavailable, not ready for a relationship, strings you along, like narcissistic or super charming, or, you know, the love bombers. It was like classic. They all look the same. They all fucking talk the same. They all dress the same. My mom even said, she's like, this is creepy. I don't even know how you're able to get so many carbon copies. And it's so interesting because for you, obviously identifying more avoidant at the time when you read it. So the author of Attached, Amir Levine, has recently come out making a statement saying that when he wrote the book, he wishes that he had shown the avoidant more compassion, because it's completely been villainized at this point. Mm. Because all of a sudden, the person that shuts down and removes themselves is the bad guy, and fuck this person, and they don't open up, and they're the enemy. But what the anxious folks don't realize, which took me fucking years to realize myself, was, guess what? You're also avoidant, because you are avoiding looking at the shit that's causing you to want to constantly co-regulate. And just because you, quote unquote, express yourself often doesn't actually mean that you're emotionally available. And oftentimes we see, if you see a pattern where you're consistently repeating the same thing over and over again, you are in fact as well emotionally unavailable and avoiding doing the work on yourself. It's not one is worse and one is better.
You know, like the pattern of attracting this, like, how did you overcome this? Or how did you actually recognize you were in this pattern? Like, did you actually step back for a minute and be like, they're all the same? And then you just started to be like, okay, I want to try different.
I remember probably maybe like a year and a half ago. No, about January of last year. I'll never forget it, actually. It was one of those dating situations that, like, you hit rock bottom. You know, it was the guy that came on really strong and was fucking amazing, and every date was better than the last. And I remember calling, I will never forget when my best friend was in town, and when he walked out, she said, either, I'll never forget, she looked at me and she said, either this is the love of your life, or we're getting played so fucking hard. And I was just like, I don't know, dude, I am not sure. I was like, we're going to find out. And that was when, like, he found out, like, he didn't live next to me. So he went back and promised, oh my God, no, I want to pursue this. So I'm going to come back and visit you every 2 months. I remember our 2 weeks. I remember him sending me a video being like, baby, I want to show you my apartment. This is your future space. I can't wait for you to come. And I mean, I'm over the goddamn moon. This is your duty. He's buying stuff for my company. He's planning all these trips with me. I'm thinking, holy shit. And I'll never forget, like, we got into a thing and he had made a comment to me. Like, I was telling him, you know, I don't feel like we're communicating. Like, I barely talked to you. And it's been like a month since you said you were going to come back. Like, I was being breadcrumbed. It was obvious what was happening. And to everyone else but me. And I confronted him about it, and he was incredibly dismissive, and he made it seem like I was fucking insane for having any basic needs. And when he came back to town and I saw that behavior in person, the next day I was with my friend and I was just like, am I taking crazy pills? What is going on? And he pulled some bullshit where he was like, I'm going to stay at a hotel tonight. I just need some space to think. And I remember I woke up in the morning and I was definitive. I was like, no matter what, this is not behavior that I want anymore. I'm tired of it. I've dealt with it. And I was like, I had to finally think of what my therapist always said was, think of future you. And I finally thought about the future me saying, if he walks back in this home and acts as if nothing's wrong, then we're just going to perpetuate the same behavior. But if I finally stand up for myself, I could finally start demanding differently. And I had his suitcase ready, packed when he showed up, and I handed it to him and I said, get the fuck off my porch. And we had a whole long talk, and it was, babe, you know, I'm emotionally unavailable and, you know, I'm just not ready. And I was like, that's great. I've always known this, but you made me fucking think I was insane for calling this out. And I was like, it's fine. You can go. And from that day, my best friend has always told me, she's like, from that day on, you dated differently, because I finally started to realize, wait a minute, doing the same thing, expecting a different result, is my brain going into protective mode, is, hey, this is, we've known that this is keeps you safe, so let's keep doing it. And it wasn't until I started to realize, if I don't make a change, then nothing changes. So I had to step up and take accountability and say, what was my part in it? Okay, I self-abandoned when I had needs and I expressed it to him and he dismissed it. That's where I should have said, hey, that didn't feel good. I don't appreciate that. But I didn't know my voice at the time. And it wasn't until I started to use my voice and realize that way I was taught when I was a kid to not communicate and to people please and to shut down and to not, wasn't serving me in my adult life, because the coping mechanisms I created in childhood ultimately became the challenges I faced in adulthood.
Yeah, always is.
Yeah, always is. And I don't know if you had like a similar experience, if there was like one situation that changed you, but I feel like once you start to see the pattern, you can't unsee it.
It's funny you're talking about that, because that man is acting like he's not emotionally available. Like, he's showing you all the things, but telling you he's emotionally unavailable. Like, how do you even differentiate and how do you navigate that? And it is a very difficult way to navigate, because you are in the fields, you really like this person, but they're telling you, I'm emotionally unavailable. Like, what way do you go about that? Especially like, as women, sometimes we get a bit more attached, especially if we've been with them for a little while. How do we like step back and see the big picture?
So essentially, when somebody tells you that they're emotionally unavailable, that is the end of, that's it. Like, that is where you halt the car, you get the fuck out. There is no reason to continue. When somebody tells you, I'm emotionally unavailable, what they're telling you is, I am shut off from my own emotions. I do not know my own wants, needs, and desires. I am disconnected from myself. They're telling you, I'm pouring from an empty cup. I don't have to give you. And it's, of course, most people, especially women, but people in general, they look at this as challenge accepted. Okay, well, then I can change their mind, and if I'm amazing and I'm perfect and I'm all these things. Now, the two sides of the coin are this. From the person who's emotionally unavailable, let's think about it this way. If all it took was me proving a case to you, hey, this is how it's gonna, this is how amazing your life could be if you're with me. Look at how amazing I am. If all it took was me to say, hey, look how amazing your life could be, then I would have changed everybody. But we also see how other people can't change people. You have to be ready and willing and have the bandwidth to do the work on yourself, because you know, like I do, the inner work that's required is daunting and scary and overwhelming and a lot, but it is worth every second of it. And if somebody is not ready for that or cannot even face their own demons, you are at that point, you're hitting your head against the rock, hoping it's going to crumble when you're the only one that's bleeding. Yeah. So for me, when I hear somebody that's saying that, and then for the other person, if you're somebody that hears someone say, I'm emotionally unavailable, or I'm not ready, or any of those bullshit things, you know, the stuff that we hear, the rhetoric that comes, for you to continue, what that means to me is that you are self-abandoning. So there is a part of you that's also emotionally unavailable, because this one feels familiar. It feels safe. You feel like, oh, your worth comes because you put somebody on the pedestal. And when we put that dynamic of, oh, I have to prove to them, I have to get them, I have to see, they have to see my worth. Look, look, look. You're reliving the parent-child dynamic, because as a child, if you had emotionally unavailable parents or somebody that was dismissive, yada, yada, of course it worked for them because it's unconditional and those are your parents. But unfortunately, this is some random schmo that you met on the internet that you might have met once. You created an entire idea of them and they've burst that bubble and you're refusing to accept it.
Yeah, 100%. I see this pattern all the time with like friends and anyone talking to me about this emotionally unavailable thing. And I sometimes would say to them, I'm like, can you please write down what you want in a partner and what you don't want in a partner? And usually like the list is so long of what they want and this person has nothing to do with it. So I always say like, you have to look at how you have been loved in the past in order to see how you're loving now. That's usually what happens. Like, I usually ask them like, what about your parents? Like, are they emotionally unavailable? Because the only way you know how to love is to search for it in an emotionally unavailable people. And the worst thing is, like, if you were searching it in emotionally unavailable people when you were like a child, you probably did never ever got it. So you're still in the dating pool trying to search for this love that you absolutely never got. And, you know, as the therapist always says, like, you're going to repeat these patterns until it's repaired. So if anyone is listening to this and they keep going after these emotionally unavailable men, then you need to have a look at like healing yourself in order to attract better for yourself. Would I be right in saying that you can attract 100%. Better whenever you have a better self-worth?
100%. Because let's think, if the way that we have to look at this is, if you don't genuinely in your heart and gut believe that the love that you think you're worthy of is going to come to you. And yes, does that require a lot of lonely nights and walking away from people and setting boundaries? Of course. But if you in your gut and you genuinely have accepted yourself for who you are and you're not looking at yourself saying, well, I'm too much and I'm too needy and I'm too this. No, it's, this is who I am. I love myself. I've done that shadow work. I've accepted myself. I'm not going to shame or blame myself. I'm going to show up authentically. If we're going out there and you're consistently, like you said, if you're consistently going through the same thing, when you start to turn that inwards and really start to reflect on that shit, two things happen. One, you get turned off by inconsistency. You get turned off going, I don't like the way I feel because I'm finally connected to how I feel and I'm no longer pushing that down. Now that I'm feeling it, I don't like this. Second of all, then what also happens is you go against your core beliefs, because your core beliefs are, I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy and yada, yada. We have to remember, that's what you learned when you were a kid. If you didn't learn learn anything else, then how are we expecting you to know? No shame or blame here. But if we can look at it and not in a lens of, I get this all the time. I'll start with clients. I had a perfect childhood. No, can't be that. It must have been the last guy I dated. Then as we start to peel back, I'm like, and you know what has nothing to do with villainizing your parents or holding, no. We're trying to figure out, where'd you learn this? So where did you learn that this equals this, or that this is how love is, or yada, yada. Once we start to kind of heal those parts, the second component of not just getting turned off by the emotionally unavailable people is that you will start to allow and receive the people that are actually trying to give it to you, because healthy will no longer equal boring to you. Instead, it's fuck yeah, this is what I deserve. This might make me feel uncomfortable. I've never had someone respect my boundaries or care about me. Because it also means that my core beliefs are now being discredited and disproved. Because look, I am worthy of love. There is somebody that cares about me. I am not too needy. I'm not too much. I'm everything that I have always believed that I am. But if you believe that that's your rhetoric, well, then no wonder that's what you're going to keep seeing.
And like, when you build up that self-love, and like some people say, like, self-love is knowing your own needs and then knowing that those needs are worthy. And then that is kind of like when you step up the game, because usually people in dating are going through this motion of, oh, like tippy-toeing around, like I don't want to ask him too much because it'll scare him away, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a difference between an avoidant and someone are just like going down a toxic route, because there is people that are avoidant, but like, them asking you for their needs is not going to turn them away.
No.
You know what I mean? If they actually really like you. So it's like, oh, they're an avoidant. Like, how do we tippy toe into this? And like, and there is certain ways that you can deal with avoidance. As someone has avoided myself, there's definitely ways you can deal with it, and it can be easier managed. But like, the person that really likes you and wants to be with you will not run away when they're asking for your basic needs of, what are we doing? What is this?
Not at all. It's like, if you're scared of losing somebody, then I'd be like, what are you holding on to? Because if having one basic conversation is going to shut them down and make them run for the hills, it's like, okay, it's good to see that behavior. And again, that's where I go with like people pleasing, fear. If fear is driving the car, you can't be shocked that you're going to be living in that space all the fucking time. My partner is by nature more avoidant and I am more anxious. We're incredibly secure in our relationship, but that didn't mean that we didn't have growing pains. Like when we started dating, I mean, he was incredibly rigid, incredibly strict. I need my space, da da da. And it wasn't that I didn't respect it. It was that I still articulated my needs. But what I also had to remember was this, was loving myself also knows that it's not my partner's responsibility to satisfy all of my fucking needs. That just because I might have a need and they don't, doesn't mean one person is right, one person is wrong. And so I think there's this misconception, especially when we come to the texting stuff of like, well, I want more texting and they have to do it. It's like, or how about we look at both people's responsibility? What is, you guys are now a partner, right? You're a team. So it's not me against you and I'm more important than you are. It's like, no. And it's not vice versa that you self-abandon for them. So like when my partner and I started dating, not a texter. Was not a texter, and I had to challenge the fuck out of my core beliefs and my thoughts and the anxiety and the uncertainty and all of that stuff. But because I really loved myself to the point where I accepted myself, I was like, listen, if this doesn't work out, I'll be okay. I'm not going to turn to shit. I'm not going to crumble. Like, would I be sad? Of course, I'm a human, but I'll move on. And we still to this day say that. But when I expressed my need to him saying, hey, I needed a little bit more texting, he came back with a boundary. Hey, this isn't a sign of my disinterest, but I'm not interested in a digital relationship. He was like, so if you're down to grow this with me in person, let's spend more time together. Let's be consistent with how we see each other in person. Otherwise, you know, that's okay. I totally understand, but I'm not interested in getting engaging in this constant texting. I looked at that and I was like, fuck, that was hot. You set a boundary. And now for me as the receiving that boundary, it's thank you so much for sharing that. Okay, let's find a commonality. Great. You're more interested in spending time in person. So let's have a standing date every week. That way I didn't feel as anxious. If I didn't get his text, it's okay. I knew I was going to see him. This is what compromise looks like, not entitlement of, well, if you don't do it my way, then get the fuck out. You're going to be alone if you do that.
It's also realizing when you go into a relationship, what is it you need to feel less anxious? Because someone who's a secure person, those lucky, lucky people don't need as much as what an anxious or an avoidant needs. Like, they will need that. And then that's where you need to do your own work in terms of like writing in your journal. What is it that I need? What really annoyed me? What made me feel anxious? Like, you know, for example, like if your partner goes on a night out and they don't text you on a night out or text you when they're home, that can sometimes make an anxious feel very, very anxious. Whilst instead of reacting with this like suspicion and this like aggression, you could literally be like, I actually need this to make myself feel safe in the relationship. And sometimes the partner retaliates because they really can't understand what, why they need that, because they don't need it because they're secure. But like, if you say, excuse me, this is, I've had certain things happen to me in the past, and this is just something that makes me feel safe. And like, even after time, you'll notice that you won't even need that text, because that person is made to feel so secure because they have, you've like came to your needs and asked for a certain thing. Yeah, you might not want a text all night, but like maybe the text at the end of the night is the compromise, etc. So it's like knowing what you need and knowing that you and your partner are completely different and have had different upbringings and different experiences in life to make you the way you are. So I always think like getting your journal out and writing what exactly you need to feel safe in the relationship. And you could look at that, and then you could look at your partners, and your partner could be like, I don't need it because I don't need anything because I'm so secure. That's amazing. But they also need to tend to your needs as well. And if they love you and they're in this together, then they will tend to them and they will compromise on certain things for sure. I definitely think that as well.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if it's important to you and you express it to your partner, then it mm-hmm. becomes a conversation. It just becomes part of, like, my partner. I'm a needy bitch. Don't get me wrong. Like, I still have a lot of needs. He'll always joke, and he's like, oh, you need the reassurance, complete the circle. And he'll give me a kiss. And he's like, oh, right, I said something cute, I have to kiss you now. He'll make fun of me for it. And I'm like, I don't take that personally. I'm like, yeah, you're damn right, I do. Show me that you love me. And it's become, but we don't get, it's not, I never did that in the beginning out of insecurity. It's more of just like, hey, I'm expressing to you and I need reassurance. And he is the first person to be like, okay, how can I reassure you? In the same way that if he needed that for me, if he was like, hey, I love you, I need a night to myself, I'd be like, okay, thanks for letting me know. No worries. Thanks for letting me know how I can support you. I'll see you tomorrow though. Great. I'll see you at 12. Perfect. It doesn't need to be so personal, because I think what a lot of people forget in dating is very rarely is it personal. Very rarely. It feels personal to you because you are the star of your own movie. But to me, you're just a fucking extra. You're just somebody that I might never see again. You might have fit your scene and gone, walked off stage left. So if we take everything as, oh my God, it must be me, it's like, well, then that's how you're going to allow everybody else to determine who you are, because you're waiting for everyone else to tell you who you are. As opposed to, if I'm going to go out and date, I knew at the end of the day, I was not for everybody and everybody was not for me. I don't even like everybody. So why would I want everyone to like me? But the right person for me, my partner, doesn't see my needs as being too much. On the contrary, he always laughs and he's like, thanks for putting up with me. And I'm like, you seem easy to me. You see how to some people, your needs are close to impossible. And to me, cakewalk, I could satisfy them. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that you just haven't met the right person.
Yeah. Love that. And the reason why I brought you here today as well is because this is the question that everyone really wants answered. And I feel like we just need to discuss it. And it is getting over an ex, and okay. It's putting the ex on the pedestal, which yeah. is the issue, I think, with some of the questions that I've been getting in for today's podcast, or even every week. It's like, I can't get over my ex. It's been two years. I think he was the best person, blah, blah, blah. And like, what is your best advice for someone to firstly, you know, deal with a breakup and begin to get over it and heal?
One second, guys. I just need to take a breath. Is anyone else feeling overwhelmed, struggling to find a moment of peace in the chaos of work, relationships, and personal challenges? I know exactly how that feels. And like you, I've been on a journey lately to find balance, to reconnect with myself. I've learned that taking time for ourselves isn't just a luxury, it's essential. And it starts with a moment of a pause, a deep breath, and a space where we can find rest and rejuvenation. And that is why I am super excited to invite you to join the Brave Way membership, a place for your mind and spirit to have a break. Imagine having access to guided meditations that not only help you sleep better, but also empower you with the energy to face your day with confidence and calm. Our journey together goes beyond just meditation. It's about diving deep into self-discovery, finding gratitude in the small things, and unlocking the potential within us. With a huge library of meditations to begin, live calls and workshops, you'll have all the tools and support to explore, grow, and transform. I understand that some aspects of meditation can be challenging, but you're not alone. Our community is here to guide and support you through every step. Whether you're navigating the complexities of relationships, manifesting, or seeking deeper insights into your thoughts and emotions, the Brave Way is here for you. So if you're ready to embrace a life of greater peace, purpose, and connection, let's embark on this beautiful journey together. Visit thebraveway.co to start your transformation. And because you're a valued listener of our podcast, use the code BRAVEPODCAST for an exclusive discount on your first 3 months. Only available this week. Remember, the path to a braver, more resilient you starts with a single step. I'm here to walk that path with you. See you on the inside, and let's make today the beginning of your bravest journey yet.
It's going to be tough, and I'm going to be honest with you. And this is, I've spoken to, like, you know, if you listen to my fucking podcast, I have therapists that are coming on all day. I didn't make the shit up. You know what I mean? This isn't like profound, controversial topics. But what I will say is staying in denial and delusion is not going to keep you there. It's not going to help you get to a place of healing. Your ex is an ex for a reason. And if I had somebody write in the other day saying, I'm stuck on this person. It's been 16 months. I can't get over them. I don't know what to do. And I was like, my issue here is that you're refusing to accept the situation for what it was. You consistently, because by putting them on the pedestal, again, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you that reaffirms your core beliefs. You can't move on. They're so perfect. They're so perfect. They're so perfect. Because what that does is it keeps you from looking at yourself going, oh my God, what did I allow? Who was this person? Like you said, what did I even like about them? Because anytime I talk about that, I had a client the other day and he's, I can't get over my ex and I can't get over, everything was perfect. Everything was perfect. And I was like, that's my first way to know you're full of shit. Everything was perfect. Everything was amazing. That means you're delusional. You're not seeing it for what it is because you have put, not the you, the proverbial you, when we put somebody in a pedestal, again, child parent dynamic. And so you're looking at it as they don't see my worth. So that means I need to work harder to show them my worth. We all know that that's like saying I'm going to walk faster than a car can drive. We all know that I'm never going to be able to do that. But if I constantly try to prove myself, I'm constantly going to be in the space of a victim. And so if you're hung up on somebody, I'm not saying not to take your time to process and feel and grieve, and you could be angry and sad and all of those things. But if you're taking 16 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, you are wasting the literal precious time we have. Because guess what is the only resource on this planet right now that is not infinite? Our fucking time. Our time is finite. Our time is, once it's done, it's done. And I'm not making women a commodity saying you have a ticking time bomb, but there is a reality of biology that if you're 38 and you want to have a child, but you keep going, you're pining over a guy from when you were 30 that you still can't get over. Biology isn't going to come and talk to you and be like, oh, you're still hung up on him. It's all right. I'll give you a few more years. Don't worry about it. Now we can go into 50 and you can still have kids. So if you want to have children in a family, that's a beautiful goal. Then we need to change the plan of how we're going to get there. And that means accepting people who they are, not projecting who you want them to be, because then that keeps you stuck in the same loop. And if you want to be stuck in the same loop, great. I'll see you in your 40s when you're still stuck on the same person. But if you want to actually accept and go, wow, maybe they weren't the perfect person. Maybe the only reason they were perfect is because I created that in my mind. I showed up as open and available, not them. I created the love in the home, not them. On the contrary, I have this within me to create this with other people.
Yeah. And I always say this as well. I feel like sometimes our friends tippy toe around the ex and they don't even like that new girl. They don't like this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like your friends try to protect you by playing everything down when in fact they need to give you like the cold hard truth that this person is not good for you. And I feel like I went through like a stage of this as well after like a really bad breakup, and I couldn't get over him for like 2 years. And when I went to therapy, the therapist gave me like the toughest love ever. Like for me, this person was my soulmate. I was meant to be with this person, and like he was the best boyfriend ever. And like when I said to like the therapist, I was like, no, but like we're soulmates, we're in love, etc. And she was like, you do know this is only your side. Like you do not know what he felt on his side. And then like I really sat back and was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Like considering as well, like the person cheated on me and did all the stuff, like I all these things in my head, like, oh, he did it because of this and because of that and because of me or because we were in a bad place and blah, blah, blah. But like, if you actually sit back and be like, okay, look at all these things that my ex has done and how it has made me feel. And you sit back and you just actually start to take it in. And as hard as it is, that's when you start hitting the different stages of your breakup. Because if you're not even hitting anger as well, like you have to go through the, like even the stages of grief. So if you've got them on a pedestal and you love them and you're so, you think it's all your fault, there's no anger there as well. So I feel like that's a good process, and to be like, okay, I actually need to take them off this pedestal because this is all the shit that they did to me. It made me feel like this, and this is why we're broken up in the first place. So it's really just sometimes the absolute tough love. And it was so horrible to hear in therapy because I was like, you don't know us, you don't know what we did. Like exactly, like I was literally like deluded. And then with the delusion becomes the denial, of course, what you said, like without acceptance you cannot heal. And I always say as well, like There's a difference between pain and suffering. Like, pain is literally feeling the pain of the breakup, and suffering is avoiding the pain by denying it. So I think, like, those are the things that you need to do. Like, you actually, if you're listening to this now and your ex is on a pedestal and you can't get over your ex, like, you need to be writing down everything that that person did that did not serve you and did not, and made you feel like crap. And then you need to begin the healing process, accept, feel anger, and move on.
And as you can tell from this podcast, we are massive advocates for therapy, especially coming to these topics. So if you're someone that is constantly dating emotionally unavailable men and being hurt by it and want to heal and attract better into your life, and also if you're someone who is an avoidant or who's an anxious attachment and wants to get a hold of that in order to stop damaging your relationships, then therapy has helped me massively throughout the years for this. And as you know, BetterHelp is our amazing sponsor, and BetterHelp is an online therapy and counseling platform. You can use the app. It is so easy to use. It is so affordable, and you can chat to your counselor, your therapist on there via Zoom, via message. And it is so, so helpful for me and for a few of my friends and everyone to navigate their way through relationships and be their best version of themselves. So to get 10% off your first month, you can use betterhelp.com/Sinead. That is betterhelp.com/Sinead.
And you know what? And I'm glad 100%. And I will, to boot that, is like, we can have two conflicting thoughts at once. You can care about somebody, but also know that they weren't able to satisfy your needs. That's a huge sign of growth. It's like,
yeah,
when you can accept it and make this person a real person of like, oh yeah, they're not perfect. They're not all these things. I created that. Once you're able to start doing that, when you can show compassion to other people, you can also show compassion to yourself. Because what I find a lot of the times is where people are more stuck is I'll even ask them like, are you upset with them or yourself? Are you upset with this person? Or are you upset with yourself that you allowed it and you didn't stand up for yourself and you felt this? It's like, that's okay. That is all right if that's the case, but we cannot continue to deny, if that is what's actually happening, that you're not accepting the breakup, you're not accepting them, and you're not accepting your part in this and theirs, because it's easy to make everything about you, because then that reinstates your core belief. Again, you had to prove yourself to them, so you never were able to. They're on the pedestal because you're just the worst person ever. But when you can actually stop and be like, wait a minute, like you with your ex, wait, he cheated on me? That motherfucker cheated on me? Okay. Because then I would say, all right, tell me all the things you want in a relationship and we'll go through it all. I want to be seen, heard, and understood. I want to feel safe. I want consistency. I want reciprocity. I want all of those. Great. Did your partner match that? Usually I'll get the starts to go, no. And I'm like, oh, really? Oh, yeah. They created a safe space. Did they? When people, yes, yes, yes. I felt all of those things. So then why couldn't you express yourself? And they're like, well, because he'd blow up. I'm like, great. So he didn't create a safe space. Again, when we can start to actually hold ourselves accountable and accept, you're right, I overlooked things. That's on me. That's one of the hardest things that you could say.
And also, like, with that, not being able to, you know, stand up for yourself can usually come out of fear of them leaving as well, which is also not a way to be in a relationship. Like, if you're living in fear in your relationship, if you fear they're going to break up with you and you're just doing everything that they ask and trying to be their perfect person, then that just creates fear. It creates insecurity. It literally, so like, I want you to ask yourself, if you're listening to this, like, if you're living in this fear that someone's going to break up with you, because this is the most horrible place to ever live, because you can't be your true self. You can't be authentic. You can't show up. You can't do your needs. So this is why when you break up with someone as well, you do end up blaming yourself, because you never actually stood up for yourself.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it any better.
Yeah. But okay. I won't leave you too long, but I just wanted to touch on two more topics. So how to know when it's time to stay or leave in a relationship.
I think the biggest thing is starting to learn to trust yourself. If you can start to learn to trust that inner voice, that gut, because we have to remember anxiety, gut versus anxiety. Anxiety comes with a narrative and comes with a body reaction. The gut is actually quite calming. Think about if you and I were talking right now and we saw a tiger, we would freeze, right? We would both be like, fuck. Our first thought wouldn't be, does he think I'm pretty? Oh my God, I knew I must have done too much. I'm wearing way too much makeup. That's why he doesn't come over here. No, our first reaction is, you need to get out of here. Safety. Just your brain is going into overdrive. Get to safety. So if that were the case, okay, cool. Now I kind of know what I need to do here, versus that anxiety that starts to come with the narrative. I knew he didn't like me. I knew he wanted to go somebody else. I knew I wasn't good enough. If you start to attack yourself, that is where we need to start having you reevaluate what's going on. But if you're looking at the relationship going, I don't know, my gut is telling me something, talk to your fucking partner. Yeah. If you're not sure if you need to stay or go, I'll tell you this. Can you talk to them or not? If you can't talk to your partner, it's time to get out. If you can, talk to them about this. Hey, these are what I'm feeling. I'm unsure. I don't know what's happening for me. I'm starting to feel some stuff. That's okay. But that's the first sign. Is like, if you trust yourself and you're able to differentiate in your gut, is this a projection? Is this my anxiety creating a narrative, or is there really an issue and you can't talk to your partner about it? There we go. Now you have your answer.
Yeah. And also I feel like, obviously, because there is relationship anxiety and then there's also real doubts. But I feel like when you're looking to stay or leave, it's basically looking at what you need in a relationship, your actual needs and wants. Because sometimes you don't know them, especially if you begin in a young relationship. Then you start to get older, you start to know yourself and you're like, God, actually, like this partner actually isn't giving me what I need and want. I'm feeling a lot of anxiety. There is then bringing the awareness to the needs and wants, then giving them to your partner, because your partner is also not a mind reader. And I think it's important to make sure that you tell them, so they could be breaking your boundaries, your like imaginary boundaries, because you haven't set them like for a few months or whatever, when you start to realize your needs, and then you haven't actually told them because they don't know any different. So if you don't communicate them, then they don't have an opportunity to keep the boundaries. So then you 100%. Give them the opportunity and then they see if they can meet your needs, they can meet your wants. And then if they're continually breaking your boundaries, then that's on you. Like that is your emotional responsibility to be like, okay, because you've literally give them not the ultimatum, but you've given them your needs and wants, they've given boundaries and they keep breaking them, then that is on you. So then I feel like if you've already given it to them, then that's the opportunity that you should be leaving. Like you can't just live in this anxiety and live in where you're at. Look at your own expectations, look up there and have a talk with this person. But if they can't talk and then they're keep making you upset, if you're crying every night and it's just constant, then you need to have a real look at it. But then obviously you've got like relationship anxiety, which does come up a lot for avoidance. I personally would get relationship anxiety around like big steps in life. So things like moving in together or, you know, just anything that's going that direction. It's like, oh, okay. And then I'm quite aware of my relationship anxiety. Like I'm quite aware that I'm going to get a wee trigger. But I think over time with therapy as an avoidant, you realize that your brain is really just trying to protect you because you've been down this road before. And you do feel like it's all going to come crumbling. And when I go through this relationship anxiety, I usually just sit with myself and sit with like my journal, et cetera, and be like, even if this goes wrong, I am well equipped. Like it doesn't have to be the breakup that really, really broke me. Because usually relationship anxiety can come from a really tough breakup where you went to like a really, really bad breaking point. And this is like, and this is an example of someone who's emotionally unavailable. Like me not being, if I wasn't over that, I would be emotionally unavailable. But coming into the point of being more sure of myself and knowing that I'm going to be okay if I break up with this person, that's sort of like where the relationship anxiety just kind of goes away. So it's important as well to even like, as we were talking about the emotional unavailable person, sometimes we do villainize the person, but like if they've actually told you I'm emotionally unavailable, sometimes they're went through a bad breakup or they're going through stuff and they just like, I'm not ready to be in a dark place again. So here is what I want to say. As well.
100%. So, we don't need to villainize people. Just because someone can't meet your needs doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. But then I would say, like you said, if you're not communicating your needs and you're not talking to your partner, if you're staying with someone out of fear, then that right there, fear, I'm not going to meet anyone else. They're going to leave me. They're not. That is when it's like, no, thank you. I'm staying with my partner because I feel fulfilled. I feel seen, heard, and understood. I feel safe. And I love my partner. It's not perfect. So that's also the first thing is like, if you're scared of going back out in your day, that is where I would be like, cool. Now we need to have this conversation of if this is the right time for you and sitting with yourself and also acknowledging, okay, I'm feeling anxious. It's okay. You're allowed to feel these emotions if you give yourself permission to feel them and sit with those emotions. It's okay. I'm feeling anxiety today. Doesn't define me. I just have some anxiety in my body.
And also realizing that like, it's usually fear. Like you don't want to go back to that place where you've been before. But then when you self-assured yourself, like, I'm okay, I'll be able to deal with this. But if we ever break up, if we do move in together and we go to these next steps and we break up, I am going to be okay. And like repeating that to yourself, telling yourself that. And then, you know, that's sort of where my relationship anxiety is. And then that's how I would ease it as well. And even on like the emotional unavailability as well, like You know, I was someone that was emotionally unavailable and told my partner that. Like, I was seeing someone and, like, I was just dating and I was like, I don't want to be in a relationship. I've just come out of one. Like, I'm not interested in this, like, blah, blah, blah. But if you want to be casual, that's fine. That was, like, my way to protect myself. But it's funny because that person then was like, oh, I understand you're emotionally unavailable. My mental health could not take us being in a casual relationship and I'm gonna like finish this here. And I was like, totally fine. And like, it's funny because I really, really, really liked that person and I wasn't ready because I just wanted to be on my own and just like, I didn't want to think about anyone else. And he respected that. And then I obviously could not stop thinking about him. And then like, I went on my dating life and then I came back and then we were together. Like, he's my boyfriend. And so sometimes that works. And that I think like, if he would have kept pushing and like stayed with me casually, we would have just been crazy. Like, he would have been annoyed at me and we would have fell out. And like, I would have been like, oh, I'm not ready. But like, he gave me the space and like, I was ready then. And it was amazing.
He respected your boundaries. He didn't try to, that's what I'm saying. Don't try to fucking protest or change someone's mind. If someone says they're not emotionally unavailable, just be like, I totally respect that. Contact me if things change.
Yeah. And like, we have those people as well. Like, we do, you know, like, in girl talks, like, we're like, a lot of girls are like, okay, I'm gonna play it cool. Yeah, I'm gonna like cool girl. Try to be his friend and I'm gonna like, he's gonna fall in love with me and we're gonna be like the best thing ever. And it's just toxic. Like, if you're listening to this and you think that you have this little plan that you're just gonna hang about with him and he thinks you're really cool, then you're going to be hurt because he's 100%. Gave you boundaries. He's told you exactly what he wants. So that's like, you need to just sit back and be like, okay, you go and do what you need to do. I'm an amazing person and I deserve full attention instead of this half hours thing. And then we'll come back to you. But yeah.
Remember, you were good before them. You'll be good after. Somebody is an addition to your life, not instead of. So if we know that and you trust yourself and it's like, I will be okay no matter what. If this works out great, that's how I was with my partner. Every time we'd see each other, I'd be like, if it works out great. And if not, that's okay. This was fun.
Yeah. 100%. Love this. Okay. So just a quick one now. How do you think did you say your partner was a little bit avoidant?
Yeah.
And you're a little bit anxious. Okay. So how do you think is the best tip to manage that relationship?
I don't take things personally. If he says no, or if he needs space or anything like that, I do not take it personal. I know it's not about me. I know that it's his issues. I get curious. I ask questions. I ask how I can support. He and I, almost every night, he'll be like, do you feel seen, heard, and understood? Is there anything I can do to support you? When things are happening, everything that's happening in the world right now, he constantly calls me. Are you okay? What can I do to help? It's just about knowing each other and supporting each other. So if you're somebody that's dating an avoidant, they're going to need some space. Leave them the fuck alone. Stop trying to get them to constantly regulate with you. And if you're avoidant, start fucking communicating. Start talking to your partner. It's okay. You're not going to lose your independence. You're going to gain something so incredible. You're good. You're safe. You are not dating your parents anymore. Yeah. So I think that's the number one thing is to look at your partner is not your mom or dad. They're not going to leave you. They're not abandoning you. They're not rejecting you. This is just somebody that you are now building an adult relationship with. So let's use that word adult and start acting like that.
Yeah. And also what's really good as well is like, if you're an anxious in a relationship, things like coaching and therapy can really help you because you can really come at your avoidant partner. And then with you overthinking and thinking, is it me? What am I doing? And acting up on your protest behavior, that is what pushes the avoidant away whenever you take it personally. You know what I mean? So
totally.
What you need to work on an anxious is coaching, therapy, understanding that you can self-soothe yourself. You do not need your partner constantly like texting you and with you to know that you're okay and you're safe. So I think that like, I suppose like that's what you meant, but
100%. Regulate your nervous system. Start to work on your nervous system and start to figure out, what is this trying to protect me from? Where did I learn this from? What's coming up for me? Get curious about your own fucking body and self. So that way you can articulate that to your partner. Hey, when you said this, it really triggered me. I didn't appreciate it. My dad used to say this growing up, and that's not something I want to be spoken to. Got done. Look how incredible that is.
What would you say is your most common thing that anxious attachment comes from? Like, what would be the most thing that would come up with your clients?
You mean like the origin of it?
Yeah, just like, you know, like sometimes when you get that initial being like, oh, that's why I did what I did or said what I said, sometimes that can really help people understand their anxious attachment. So like, obviously there's so many different reasons, but like, is there any common ones that like are quite common in your practice?
Yeah, usually like inconsistent parents. Like I grew up with inconsistent parents. I grew up, you know, my mom was a people pleaser or my dad was a narcissist. Like, it's kind of a lot of the same type of thing of like, oh, yeah, I have a pattern. I keep going for the same thing. It feels safer. I'm scared to open up. It's that same rhetoric that we know so well, which is why I've been able to work with people so well. I'm like, I know it because I was it. I was her. I was the girl that texts 1,000 times and would have panic attacks if someone didn't respond back and would write guys off because they didn't text me in a minute. I was doing all of that and it was never serving me until I started to really get my shit together and be like, wait a minute, you're part of the problem, right? You're not part of the solution. And I started to date differently and I started to date with more security and I started to love myself. And now here we are.
Yeah. Amazing. Love this. Well, I won't keep you too long because I know you've got a call, but I just want to say thank you very much and let us know where we can find you because I know you have an amazing podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. So it's called Do the Work Podcast. So you can find that anywhere podcasts are found and Do the Work on Instagram and Sabrina.Zohar on TikTok or Instagram is me. Yeah. Would love to connect and thank you so much for having me. This was an awesome conversation and I hope it helps some people.
Thank you very much. And thanks for listening. Let us know if you want to review, subscribe, etc. And thank you very much.